Are you wanting to live a life with more clarity and happiness? I'm Tammy Hill, a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex educator, wife, mother, and grandmother. I am also an optimist. I strive to live my life on purpose, with purpose. I'm here to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Live your why means to align your core values with the way you want to spend your time. Living my why includes bridging the gap of understanding sex as both a sacred marital act and as pleasurable, passionate energy that adds zest and happiness to life. I want you to embrace sexual joy without shame. Integrating your sexual nature for goodness will bring you strength, joy, and peace. Join me this season for the Live Your Why podcast, and together we can live a life full of passion and purpose. Hey, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. Often I have clients come in, students talk to me about painful sex. What can they do? Where do they go for help? Well, we have an expert on today, Dr. Sarah Reardon. She hosts the account on Instagram called The Vagina Whisperer, and it is just chock full of exercises and wonderful information to help you with your pelvic floor. I'm going to visit with her today about painful sex and what we can do. So listen in today to the Live Your Why podcast. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. So many of you write in and ask me about pain during sex. And so I got the expert, Sarah Reardon. Dr. Sarah Reardon is here today. She's known on Instagram as the Vagina Whisperer. And she has wonderful information to help women understand all the genitals, the vagina, and the pelvic floor. And I'm so excited to have her come on and talk to us a little bit about pain, painful sex. Will you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to study all of this?
Absolutely. So I am a doctor of physical therapy and have a board certification in women's health. And I've been practicing pelvic health physical therapy for the past 17 years. And I started this right out of graduate school. You know, as physical therapists, we work with muscles and tissues and nerves in the body. And I specialize in treating the pelvic region of the body. And that part of our body plays a role in peeing and pooping and birth and organ support, but also intercourse. And so, you know, I started this right out of graduate school. I think it was just really interesting to me as a woman to learn more about my own body. And I really love working with patients. I think helping people with something that they feel they didn't know there was help for, they feel really shy about, or sometimes ashamed. It's been really rewarding to be able to see their progress and kind of help them during that journey.
Oh, I imagine that's very, very rewarding. How did this become a passionate topic for you?
You know, I think that, again, it was just like, oh, there's a right way to pee and there's a right way to poop. And so I think that that was just kind of a little bit eye-opening to me, and to recognize that there are muscles that are responsible for that, that we never learned that growing up. Mm-hmm. And it really should be something that, you know, the next generation kind of gets as part of their health education. And then again, it was really just working with patients. I mean, we see all genders, we see all ages. But for me specifically, I think when, you know, people were coming in over and over and saying, like, I've been dealing with this for years, I thought there was no help. And just seeing how their lives have changed, whether it's being able to have intercourse for the first time with their partner, and then a year later, seeing them in the grocery store pregnant with their first kid, and realizing kind of the changes in their lives that you just are able to help support them through. And then I think social media really kind of helped just share more awareness about this specialty to people worldwide.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I imagine that's done a lot. You have a huge following and your content is so good. I think you've just
got
such valuable information there. You're a great resource. So as a doctor of physical therapy, I just am curious if you could wave a magic wand and have women in particular understand a few things that are most important regarding their pelvic floor and pelvic health, what would these be?
You know, I think it's really kind of bringing it back to the basics of what does this muscle do? It supports your organs. It has the sphincters that keep in pee and poop. And then we want it to relax, to empty your bladder and bowels. It supports growing baby during pregnancy. And then we want it to relax during a vaginal birth. It, you know, stays contracted throughout the day. But then when we want to have intercourse or have a bowel movement, we need it to relax. So I think just thinking about this, like it's a muscle. It's tense and tight when we need it to be strong, and then it's relaxed when we need it to relax. But like any other muscle in your body, it can have problems. It can be tight and knotted, and that can cause pain with sex or incomplete bladder emptying or constipation. It can be weak and relaxed, and that may cause prolapse or urinary leakage. So just really thinking about this part of their body. And I think that when we understand something better, it becomes less scary. Mm-hmm. When we talk about it like a body part, like a shoulder or an ankle, we just see it as a body part. So that's probably just, you know, the number one thing is just kind of, you know, I think oftentimes even in health education, we skip from like the belly button to the knees and we don't talk about the pelvis, but there's just really important pieces of day-to-day life that occur there that we need to kind of understand better.
Yes, absolutely. So tell us this muscle, I understand it's hammock shaped. Is that right?
That's right. It's a great way to describe it, Tammy. And, you know, if you think of the skeleton of the pelvis, we are used to kind of seeing that basin or bowl of the pelvic bones. And then at the very bottom of that, imagine like a hammock of muscles that attaches from the pubic bone to the front, tailbone to the back, and then side to side. And that hammock supports your pelvic organs. So your uterus, your ovaries, your rectum, which holds poop, your bladder, which holds pee. And so those muscles are supporting those organs all throughout the day, during pregnancy, supports a growing baby, et cetera. And then, you know, it's also has the openings to the urethra where urine exits, the vagina for vaginal intercourse, menstruation, vaginal birth, and then the anal opening. I think what's important about what we just mentioned is that, like, if we just kind of have an understanding about this part of our body, then we know when it's not working properly. If we're leaking, if we're straining for bowel movements, if we're having pain with sex or orgasms, these are all signs that, like, that muscles could be off a little bit. But if we don't realize that there's a part of our body or a muscle that could be responsible for that, we tend to just deal with it or not talk about it, or we don't even know who to go to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So again, I think it's that really kind of education piece that helps to say, okay, this is what's normal. So when something's not normal, we know to seek help.
Yeah. And I hope that this podcast episode will help normalize and help people be aware of this region of the body. So when the hammock muscle is too tight, is that when you have pain during intercourse?
Typically. So there's a variety of reasons that someone can experience pain with intercourse. Some of the common ones may not be related to the pelvic floor. So it could be vaginal dryness, which can happen if you are on an estrogen-based birth control or if you're menopausal and have lower estrogen levels. That could cause dryness that could also cause pain. There's certain nerve or dermatological conditions that could also just make the tissue really sensitive, and that will feel like not good at all, even when underwear is touching it or when you're sitting. But with the muscle aspect, there's a couple of different things that we see, and there's two layers to these pelvic floor muscles. There's an outer layer and a deeper layer. That outer layer, if it has tension or spasm, it's like nothing is able to insert into the vagina. And it feels like if you're trying to insert a tampon or your partner's penis or any, or a speculum during a pelvic exam, it feels like something's hitting a wall. And it's because those muscles are so tight and spasm, nothing can get through. Now, there's also a deeper layer of muscle so that, say, once you get past the opening, things feel better. But with deeper insertion, there's pain or tenderness, or it feels like something's bruisey. That could be the deeper layer of muscle spasm. So we always kind of assess which layer of muscles is it, and then guide someone to help relax these muscles, just like we would help them relax their neck and shoulder muscles if they had headaches.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about how to relax that?
So yeah, absolutely.
A lot of my listeners and a lot of my clients are young Christian women who have not been typically engaging in sexual intercourse prior to marriage, and then get married and, oh, it hurts. And they have experiences that sometimes are quite traumatic, unfortunately. And so I'm hearing from you that you can have, as far as the pelvic floor is concerned, you can have pain that is resistant with the muscle being tight, resistant to penetration, but then there's a deeper level of pain. And so that when insertion takes place or penetration takes place, where in the vagina would you feel that pain in the deeper area?
It feels deep. So it can almost feel like it's in your hip, like a deep hip muscle. It can feel like it's like in your abdominal wall. It feels like somebody's like poking something. It feels bruisey. So the first condition I described is something called vaginismus, where the outer third of the vaginal wall is spasmed and nothing can kind of insert through there. And, you know, and then there's the second layer of muscles, we just kind of explain that it's something called dyspareunia. So dyspareunia just means painful sex. So that could be vaginismus, but vaginismus is typically the outer layer, just pelvic floor muscle tension with deeper insertion, certain positions, bruisey, painful. That tends to just be the deeper layer of muscles. And we describe that as muscle spasm or dyspareunia.
Mm-hmm. So what happens? What should a client do? Where should they go?
You know, it's so interesting because I think it's, if it were as easy as telling someone to relax, I probably would be out of a profession. So, you know, it's very normal that if something is, we're told to kind of avoid something or this isn't okay or this might hurt, our body in response to that kind of anticipated discomfort or pain or even stigma tenses up, right? So if somebody tells me, oh, you're about to watch a really scary movie, and I don't like scary movies at all, I'm just going to be like a ball of tension that whole time. That's the same thing that happens to your pelvic floor, is that these muscles hold tension. And then when we anticipate something like vaginal penetration or insertion, we are anticipating pain, and that anxiety causes us to tense up even more. So it's unfortunately not as easy just to say relax, because our body's doing this and we don't even know how to kind of stop that cycle. Some of the very basic things I tell people to do is like take intercourse off the table, right? So I would even just do certain therapeutic things for myself without a partner even around. That may be some deep belly breathing, some stretches. So I have a whole kind of like painful sex series in my, you know, fitness platform, because we talk about tensing or tightening the pelvic floor, but we don't talk about relaxation of the pelvic floor. So stretching, yoga, breathing, and there are certain tools called like vaginal trainers or dilators that look like tampons of different sizes that we educate people to kind of gradually insert into the vaginal opening. That's not to stretch your vagina. That's to help your muscles not guard or spasm when you're attempting to insert something. So it's really kind of breaking that cycle of tension to allow something in the vagina to be less scary, less uncomfortable, and therefore less painful.
Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing then that there's exercises they can find from you, which are excellent to help with this. And also that it's okay not to have intercourse until you feel like you can relax and enjoy it.
Right. And so there's a lot of transitions that you can do even using those dilators. So I tell people to usually like practice using them by yourself, you know, in a calmly lit room with dim lights. And, you know, you don't want to watch Game of Thrones and use them. Like, you want your nervous system to be as calm as possible. And then you maybe bring your partner into the room. So maybe your partner's lying next to you and watching you do it. And then maybe your partner is inserting it for you. And then maybe you try it before intercourse. So really kind of starting to associate something in the vagina with not pain really helps just keep that nervous system quiet, help those muscles relax. And then you start adding different, you know, little factors in, like another person, your partner, and then not being in control of the situation to see how your body responds to that.
Mm-hmm. Such good steps. Now, what about dyspareunia, that deeper pain? What should women do then?
So there's a couple options. I mean, I'm always a fan of working with a pelvic PT, but that's not always accessible to everyone. In addition to the vaginal dilators or trainers, there's another device called a TheraWand, and it looks like an S-shaped wand. These are not like racy, sexy tools. These are literally medical devices. And it almost mimics like a, say you're working with a physical therapist, they use their finger into the vaginal opening to kind of release those deeper muscles. This wand acts like that. So it kind of goes into the vaginal opening and then you press it towards the side muscles, and that really can help release those inside deeper muscles. Same things. We also work a lot with, like, you know, breathing, lots of yoga stretches, using massage balls to release the hips, a foam roller to release the back. I'm just thinking about all of these layers of your pelvis and your hips and your pelvic floor softening and relaxing. And that can also help kind of quiet down the internal muscles and prevent you from tensing so much.
Mm-hmm. So I wasn't introduced to pelvic floor therapy until I was in well into my 50s. And that was not for it being too tight, but for being too loose after all my babies and yep. my age. Talk about that. That's when the hammock is loose, not tight, right?
Right. So if we think about the hammock lengthening during pregnancy, so imagine a hammock that maybe is supporting a lemon or an avocado, that hammock's not going to sink and stretch that much. But if we think about a hammock supporting a pumpkin or a watermelon, that hammock's going to stretch lower, sink down, get a little bit more lengthened. And then if you're breastfeeding or lactating, sometimes that estrogen levels or low estrogen levels also cause your muscles to stay a little bit weaker during that time. And then you get pregnant again and go through that same process. So it is typical that after pregnancies, multiple pregnancies and birth, that these muscles get lengthened and relaxed. And it doesn't even matter which method of birth you have, cesarean or vaginal, your pelvic floor changes.
Interesting.
During pregnancy. And then with aging, we have lower estrogen. And estrogen is what helps kind of plump up those vaginal walls, help moisturize the tissues. And when you have less estrogen, whether you're getting treatment for breast cancer or you're going through menopause or you're on birth control or you're breastfeeding, that your tissues just get thinner and drier and less supportive. And that's what can lead to some other pelvic or floor issues like weakness, prolapse, leakage, things like that.
And so when a woman that's loose, Kegels are good, right? Sometimes I see people say, don't do Kegels. And then I read, do Kegels. What's the truth?
Yeah. So, you know, you can, it's both. So if you have tension, you don't want to do Kegels because tension is tightening the pelvic floor muscles when it's already tense and tight. So if you have painful sex, pause the Kegels. If you have weakness, which is just purely like the muscles are just not contracting and engaging when we need them to, then that would be the time to work on strengthening. So Kegels are just a pelvic floor contraction. Like if you're urinating on the toilet and you try to stop your urine stream, that's a Kegel. Now, don't do Kegels while you're peeing. You can just test it one time to see if it's the right contraction. But you can't sit around all day and just do Kegels in the carpool lane and think that your muscles are going to get stronger. It's really working that contraction into lifting and exercise and squatting and kind of all the movements you do during the day that are going to help those muscles get stronger over time.
Mm-hmm. Such good information. We're going to take a little pause and come back. And I want to hear a little bit more about those exercises that can really help strengthen that area. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and I am so darn excited to tell you a little bit about a spring fling couples retreat that I'm planning. This is going to be a spring fling in Seattle. This will be May 17th through 19th, 2024. We're going to be staying at the beautiful Thompson Seattle, right there on Puget Sound, in the beautiful heart of the Emerald City. You will want to come to this retreat and learn a little bit more about making love techniques, connecting deeper and richer with your spouse, and of course, enjoying beautiful Seattle. Join me May 17th through 19th in this beautiful city. We are back with Dr. Sarah Reardon talking about painful sex. So, Sarah, I wanted to just ask, are there any other little tidbits that you can share with us that would help women who are experiencing painful sex? Maybe they have used the dilators and they're doing the things that you've already talked about and it still hurts. What should they do?
Absolutely. So, you know, I think pain is always information for our bodies. It's never something that we should just push through. So if you're doing a lot of these things and you are still experiencing pain, there's a couple of small changes I'd make. And then I'd also say like, hey, this is when you need to go see a specialist. So first of all, I would use a lubricant. I really prefer water-based lubricants or an all-natural lubricant like coconut oil or something like that. You just can't use coconut oil with latex, but otherwise just use a lubricant and that will decrease friction. You also use lubricant when you are going to use the vaginal trainers and wand. So you should be pretty comfortable with that and know that it's not going to cause irritation, and then use it during intercourse as well. Also, there are less positions that may be more relaxing for you. So typically lying on your back, placing some pillows underneath your knees so that your hips are supported, that may be more comfortable than you kind of in hands and knees position, which can be a little bit more intense and go a little bit deeper. Also, lying on your side and having your partner behind you may also be less penetrating, more comfortable than you may on top, where it also goes a little bit deeper. So kind of work in those zones and also use your dilators in those positions so that you can see how does this feel. I always say it's like you don't want to run a marathon before you run a mile. So think about using these vaginal trainers like training for a race. And so when you actually go to run the race, you're like, okay, I've been here before. I kind of know what to expect. And then if pain is persisting, I would really encourage you to check in with your gynecologist. You want to make sure that nothing else is going on, whether it be infection or scar tissue or another, you know, more significant condition than is outside of the muscles.
Mm-hmm. Those are great tidbits. Thank you. What about women in particular who experience, you know, that sex is such an emotional exchange. You are, you know, loving this person. You're naked with this person. There's so much vulnerability and things that are going on. And maybe they continue to experience pain and they don't want to experience pain and they're doing everything they feel like they can and it still hurts. I know that women experience a lot of shame with that. Can you speak to that? What can these women do to not feel ashamed and to kind of work through that with their partners?
Absolutely. This is a really hard one. And I think, you know, the one thing I do want people to know is that you are not the only one who is experiencing this. One in four women will have pain with intercourse at some point in their lifetime. And 9 out of 10 women have pain with sex the first time they have sex after giving birth. So it's actually a really common experience. It's not normal, but it's common. And I think we just don't talk about it and it can feel very isolating. So the fact that we're even able to chat about this on your podcast is just letting people know like, hey, we know this is out there. We know this exists. And there's things to help. The other thing is that I think it's really easy to feel like we're failing. You know, if you are a new wife and you feel like, you know, you have this pressure and this expectation of yourself and also of your marriage, it's really easy to feel like I'm letting my partner down. But I really want you to think about this like any other part of your body. Like if you had headaches, you wouldn't be like, I'm a failure. I'm not a good wife. So if we really think about this part of our body like just a body part and we do the treatment that can help the body part, sometimes it takes away a lot of that pressure and stigma that we feel on ourselves. And this is not that your partner's doing anything wrong. This is not that your body is failing. This is literally a muscle spasm like you have anywhere else. And this is how you treat it. We just don't talk about this part of our body a lot. So it can feel very shameful.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's also therapists who can help walk you through these things. You know, I think even just going to a pelvic therapist sometimes can help because you're like, huh, somebody who understands, somebody who I can talk to about this because we so rarely talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So true. So you mentioned that 9 out of 10 women experience pain the first time they have intercourse after childbirth. How frequently do women have pain the first time they have intercourse? Period.
You know, I don't know the statistics on that. I know that 25 to 30% of people have pain with sex across their lifespan. And so, you know, it's probably the same for people who are trying intercourse for the first time. I think a lot of this, again, it has to do like this is such a mystical part of our body. We're never really educated on it. We cover it up. We hide it. We don't talk about it. We rarely show it to our partners. And so sometimes, again, think of this like it's really hard to go from like no sexual activity to like, hey, we're having sex now in one night. So sometimes it's just a little bit of exploration. It's like, okay, let's just start with touching here or what feels good or, you know, finding what does feel really good and going in those directions versus jumping towards like, I have to do this one thing and I don't even really know how to do it. You know, I think a lot of it is basic as it is, just kind of starts with education and learning like, how does it feel when my finger is inserted? How can I insert a tampon comfortably? Just like exploring, like people don't even know they have 3 openings down there. So it's like, we have to kind of start with the basics and then it can become something that you share with a more, you know, in a very intimate setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Such good advice. Practical advice. I wanted to ask one more question about internally. Are you familiar with the G-zone, the phraseology that they're using?
Yes.
With G-zone? Okay.
Yeah.
So I love the whole knowledge that we have prosthetic tissue, that there's so much there that can provide pleasure. And yet, often when I'm working with couples, it's uncomfortable to have her husband's fingers up inside of her there. And yet, in order to explore and understand how this all works and the pleasure that can come, you need a little bit of space and time for that to happen. Do you have any recommendations? Is it the same slow lube, all of that, or is there anything else you would suggest?
You know, communication is key for all of this. And I think that it's really interesting because I always think that like the hardest work we actually do is with ourselves, and then we're able to do work with our partner. So it's even like understanding what feels good to you. Is it stimulation to your G-spot, or is it clitoral stimulation? A lot of people have these expectations to have climax or orgasm during vaginal insertion or vaginal sex, when actually, you know, only 20% of people can have an orgasm with vaginal sex, and the other 80% do it with clitoral stimulation. And that's just the data. So, you know, again, it's an area where we can feel like we're doing something wrong or our body's not working, when it's actually working exactly the way that it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. So we've just been told a different story. So I think, you know, I do support my patients kind of doing self-exploration, self-stimulation, because if we know what feels good to us, then we're able to better communicate that to our partners. I think that communication is key. And I actually think that communication, like not during sexual intercourse, is actually key. So even being like, hey, can we try this? Or, hey, I really like it when you do that. Or this feels really good when X happens. And, you know, it's all like framing it in a positive and giving positive feedback. But when you're in the heat of the moment, it's hard to have those conversations. So, you know, I think ultimately our partners want us to feel good. They just need also guidance from us on how to do that.
100%. I think there's so much to be said in the idea of self-exploration, which often is something that Christians don't feel like is appropriate to do. And so I think fundamentally you need to know your body and understand it. We know that for sex to feel good, we need to be aroused. And a lot of arousal, you know, needs to take place down in the clitoral glands and internally in all of the different clitoral complex and G-zone. Talk about, just briefly, if you can, arousal. What are some tips for arousal, getting that blood volume there quicker, or right, maybe not worrying about the quickness? But I think a lot of women are always worried that they need to hurry it along. What helps with arousal?
Right. It's interesting because I think we're always like, okay, let's get to the next thing, because we have a running list of things to do.
Yes.
After that.
Yes.
It's not that we don't want to do it. We just want to do other stuff afterwards. So, you know, there's actually a really great book that I recommend called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. And, you know, even as a pelvic health professional, I found it really fascinating to think about, like, there are certain things that put our foot on the brake, and there are certain things that put our foot on the gas. And you can have your gas, like, your foot on the gas as hard as you can to help with arousal. But if you have a foot on the brake, it gets really hard to get where you want to be. And so finding the things that help kind of you figuratively take your foot off the brake, whether that's lighting or not having heavy conversations before sexual activity, or prioritizing the time so that you don't feel like it's, you know, not a priority, or, you know, not running through your grocery list before you're trying to have intimacy. Arousal really starts before touch even happens. I mean, it's how we can feel aroused when we're just looking at our partner or watching a TV show or hearing something. So it all comes with kind of tapping into this deeper sense of ourselves, where we're able to shut off other things, take our foot off the brake, and then we can put our foot on the gas. I mean, for me, if my husband like makes me a cup of coffee in the morning and wakes me up with a kiss, I'm like, that is more stimulating to me than like any other grab or touch anywhere else. So again, I think it's kind of knowing sometimes what those like little nuanced things are, so that it doesn't feel like such a huge bridge to gap from like just doing the grocery list and putting the kids to sleep towards sexual activity. It's different for everyone though.
Mm-hmm. But you such good information. It often begins with things that have nothing to do with sex whatsoever, that arousal piece. Talk about men and the pelvic floor. We've been just talking about women, and men also have pelvic floors. Anything that we should know about for that?
men have a pelvic floor. And, you know, I think that I'll often get the question, what do men come see you for? And it's pretty much everything except for birth. So it can be, you know, they have the same muscles. They have two openings, one for the urethra and prosthetic fluid and semen. And then the other is the anal opening for pooping. Really, the clitoris is supposed to be kind of, you know, a similar to the penis, kind of a stimulatory organ that we have. But, you know, men will come see us for any type of urinary issue, like incomplete bladder emptying or, you know, frequent urination at nighttime, burning with urination, any kind of prostate issues, but also pain with sitting, tailbone pain, difficulty with erections, difficult, like premature ejaculation, painful bowel movements, constipation. So kind of all the same things, just nothing related to birth, but you know, these are muscles for them. They can be too tense. After surgeries or with aging, they can be weak. And we want to work on these muscles just like we would, you know, in the female body.
Mm-hmm. Do you have information on your account that talks about pelvic floor for men, the exercises they should be doing as well?
So the exercises are very similar, which is interesting, but you go through, everything goes through the anal opening. So if you're going to do, so a lot of the stretches and the breathing and kind of the releasing the hips is all the same. I would say instead of using the kind of little wand or dilator vaginally, we actually use it rectally. So we have them lie on their side or lie on their back and they use it through the anal opening. And the muscles are just like that same hammock, that same bowl of muscles, and they go to those tight, tender spots and release them. So it's, I know it sounds kind of wacky and crazy, but it's really, it often takes kind of a big change for a male to come into our clinics and be like, hey, I need help, versus coming in earlier and be like, oh, something feels a little off. But I've always treated males in my practice. You know, I've been doing this for 17 years and there have been times that 50% of my caseload is males.
Wow, that's terrific. I know that women tend to seek out help before men do, so I'm glad that they can get some good help. And it's really nice to know that it's so similar to what women do for their own pelvic needs. Sarah, is there any little tidbit of information you feel like we've missed in our conversation that you just want to make sure to add?
You know, no, this has been really wonderful. And, you know, I just encourage folks, if they're listening and they're like, this is me, I think I need help. There's a lot of different avenues to do that, whether it's seeing a pelvic PT in person, whether it's doing a virtual session with one, whether it's doing like online programs like mine for strengthening or relaxation. There's so much more out there to help support people and make it accessible and affordable. I just really encourage you to do it. And if it doesn't feel like the right time, you'll come to us when it is. But I don't want anyone to think that, one, they're broken or something's wrong with them, but two, that there's no help, because there absolutely is. And sometimes it just makes a couple of small changes to make such a big difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always say sex should be pleasurable and enjoyable and not just tolerable. So I really hope that for your community and for all the women listening.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, this is the Live Your Why podcast. And so I like to wrap up each episode and have my guests share a little bit about their why. What are you all about, Sarah? What's your why?
You know, I think that I am really passionate about this field, obviously. I think it's just so amazing to help people understand their bodies better. And this, to me, it's like, is dinner table conversation. I talk about it all day. You know, I just want people to feel less alone. I want them to feel empowered, informed, and that, you know, to just really understand our bodies better. But my real why is like my two little boys, you know, who are 6 and 8. And I think about the world that they're growing up in is that I can even teach them about their bodies. But then they also, when they have partners, if they're female partners, like they will just better understand their partner's bodies. And I just really think normalizing these conversations is so important. You know, they are just the joy of my life, even though they drive me totally bananas. But it's, you know, I really love what I do and they see that. But they are the joy of my life.
Yeah. When you talk about them, your whole face lights up. It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, they're little bananas. If you follow me on social media, you'll see them. But they are two wild boys, but they're just awesome. And I think becoming a mother made me so much more passionate about this field, because I'm like, people need this support. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to be able to make it available for them.
Yes. And you are doing a beautiful job of that. Thank you for being a guest on my podcast. You've been delightful to interview, so knowledgeable and smart. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Tammy. It's been a pleasure.